Reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter 15, Omigana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurudeva Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Kadati Sapadantikam. Benadar Swami, I'm back. The call just dropped. anyway, for those of you that are still on, you know, one of my strengths, I think, Rati, maybe you've been going on for about 10 years. And one of my strengths is consistency, and I've really tried to keep these up. And just the last couple of weeks on Wednesday, it's been disrupted. And I know that the regularity of the class, it just conditions people to a particular program and the seriousness of it. So I expect there's probably a few less people here on the class today. But I'm hoping that I can, you know, be consistent on this, that if I can be consistent on this, then it'll build up again. Especially as we're going to get into we're getting into the most interesting stuff now. I mean, aren't you a little dry now? A little, you know, some things we have to get through a little more difficult, tattva-wise, even I'm trying to figure it out. But greetings from Govardhan, and I'm just sitting behind my desk in Govardhan. I'm so happy to be here, and I just kind of always want my life to be my Govardhan life the whole year, and I kind of try, but it just doesn't afford the type of regulation that I have here. Kartik is Niyama Seva. You do the same thing every day. I think if there's any strength I have in Krishna consciousness, it's because of that regulation. So let me read where we're up to and give a review, because I think it's almost been a month. But those that have lost that regulation due to me not being here, you can tell your friends I'm back. So Vrajanath, the transcendental entities and material objects belong to completely different categories. How can material objects be used as appropriate examples for understanding transcendental subject matters? So we've been in the section of Jiva Dharma. As you remember, if we go all the way back, there was some logician that became a devotee of studying the logic of Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya was a logician. And he's becoming a great devotee, and now we're following his life, and he's probably now the main protagonist to the end of the book. As he becomes educated in Krishna consciousness from the very beginning to the very end. And there's a relationship between the very beginning and the very end. The very beginning is called Sambandhagyan, kind of a metaphysical knowledge. Otherwise, you know, faith is mostly based on experience, but either the experience comes from an initial understanding or it's supported from an initial understanding. That's how we generally come and support our Krishna consciousness. And Sambandhagyan, knowledge of relationship, which means understanding the relationship of the energies of God in this world will help you understand your relationship with God and ultimately feel it. If you don't understand it, there won't be inspiration. There won't be either understanding or inspiration to worship God. I said that many times. If you don't understand the relationship between spirit and God, and you think spirit is God, what would be, why would you, if there was no question of worshiping God, you are God. It's not a question of love. Love requires a subject and an object. You don't understand the relationship between God and matter. You think God is matter. Why would you worship God? So you have to have these understandings.
Okay, I'm back. I'm back. It's just temporarily dropping. It's not a thing. So just bear with me. I'm kind of getting more enthusiastic because this is a disruption. So, and it matures from an understanding to a feeling. Aham sarva shiprabhavo patasavam pravartyate iti bhuta bhajanti mam buddha bhavasavata. I'm the source of this material and spiritual world. The wise who know this engage in my devotional service. There is a relationship between Buddha and Baba. So we're studying the Buddha, and then we'll study the Baba. Now that was the point I'm making. So this person comes, and he's because he's taking initiation, and his name is Vrijanath. And he's really a great devotee, or potentially one. So he's coming every day. I forgot where he lived, but he's coming to Godrin Dup and Srivasandam where the Vaishnavas assemble. And it's always such a beautiful scene when we see the Vaishnavas assembled. Because it's a beautiful scene when there's harmony. When people situate themselves independently of some partnership, group, or God, then there's conflict. This is no common center. When you see a real Vaishnav Sangha, there's a common center. And that's what it facilitates love. If people have their own agenda, it causes discord. That's why when you have a group, you try to create harmony. This is our common goal. And sometimes we even see in Vaishnava society that someone will come from another group into another group, not to serve that group, but to serve their own. Now, they may have a legitimate function and goal, but they come into another group, they want to serve theirs in kind of a sectarian mood, and that causes discord. So a Vaishnava Sangha, it has this unity. And one of the things is because the people in it understand that the world is not just about them. And ultimately, they understand that the world is about God. And they have a mood of service. And they position themselves by their consciousness in a position where that love or service can flow.
Hare Krishna, I'm back again. Dhanadhar Swami. I don't know what this phone system is. Usually it's pretty good here. Anyway, and Vrijanath, being inspired by being people of realization, he reveals his heart and asks a question. And, the question he asks is, who am I and where did I come from? And Babaji Maharaj really appreciates this question. He said, you know, when you get to this question, it's a very, very high stage of evolution in spiritual life. Very, very few people get to this question. Very, very few people get to this question. Tato Brahma Jigyasa, that level of inquiry. Very, very few people get to that point. Yeah, I mean, it's just like looking for guru. Starts by going in the heart and wanting to be guided by truth. And the truth defines our identity and explains our present situation. So that's challenging because our identity is based on various samskaras for enjoying and controlling the world. And we have deep attachments to our, we have deep attachments, and there they dictate an identity which we're very attached to. I recently I was with this young person. He was serving me, very like a diplomat's family, and very intelligent, very talented. Somehow, I'm in Vrindavan, and people I know come, and many of them are women. I need to have a young man, who otherwise I can't really preach to them or speak to them or meet them. So this time when I saw him, he's Indian. And, you know, he was like a Babaji, long hair, beard, etc. A really cool look. But, you know, I speak to him and... You know, it always comes down to the point of surrender. That if you really, really, really want to advance, you want the truth to dictate your life. The truth doesn't negate our propensities, our individuality, etc. in this body. But it guides it, and sometimes, and does negate some things that are they have also. So you know, I kind of talked to him. I got down to that point, and it's I'm afraid of losing my individual identity. Well, muktir hidva yata rupam sarupena vivastita. Liberation means we do give up the external identity and embrace the eternal identity, our own real identity. So when you actually get to the point of really wanting to know what is my identity, you know, and how did I get this other one that I have to transcend, and why did I accept this other one which I have to transcend, then you're starting to engage in spiritual life. So he asked this question basically of, you know, who I am, and that then he explains, well, this is great, and this is answered in the question about Jiva Tattva. And then he talks about Dashamula, the 10 root instructions of Lord Chaitanya. And he already covered Shakti Tattva, and now he's going to cover Jiva Tattva. And Vrijanath is very intelligent, so they have a nice dialogue. But the conclusion is this Jiva Tattva is, or the Jiva, it comes from the Jiva Shakti. And it's a marginal potency of God. And its nature is independence to choose the internal potency or the Maya potency. It's the tata means the line on the ocean, which is neither water nor land. Anyway, if you really, you can read it again, but it discusses it in detail, and it's discussion of the Mayavadi conception of Jiva Tattva and why that it's an illusion is very, very powerful, how it deals with that. Very, very powerful. So anyway, it's a reference. I think we have to go on, but it's an incredible discussion, and it discusses all the intricacies. And now, the part we're at now, it discussed Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, how it's simultaneously one and different. And it gave the example of the sun, where the sun rays are simultaneously separate from the sun and the sun itself, the particles. It's not like, you know, you have your nail and you cut your nail off. They gave this example. You know, the nail came from the body, you cut it off. It's really different now. It's not your body anymore. We're not our body anyway, but I think you get the understanding. So this, and so the analogy between the sun particles and the living entity and God, it's simultaneously one and different. So that question's been brought up in Vrajanath. Vrajanath says, if transcendental entities and material objects belong to completely different categories, how can material objects be appropriate examples for understanding transcendental entities? And before I read the explanation, which I found completely fascinating, is that we studied this already with Shakti Tattva, that the material energy, it's the same energy transformed. There are three divisions, we discussed this, there's three divisions of the Sarup Shakti, and there's three manifestations and three functions. The three manifestations are the Jiva Shakti, the Chit Shakti, the spirituality, Jiva Shakti, the marginal potency, the Jiva Shakti, the marginal energy, and the Maya Shakti. And remember, he described how the functions of the Sarup Shakti, and the functions are existence, knowledge, and happiness. Those are the three functions of the Sarup Shakti, the internal potency. And those functions, when they interact with the three manifestations, they manifest in different ways. For example, the Sadini Shakti, which is one manifestation of the Sarup Shakti, when it's influenced by the function of existence, which is the Sandini Shakti, manifests the spiritual world. When it touches the Maya Shakti, it's Brahman. And when it touches the Jiva Shakti, it's Brahman. And the Maya Shakti, it becomes the material world. So it's a manifestation of the Sarup Shakti mixed with a function of the Sarup Shakti. So it's connected to the Sarup Shakti. So the point here that's so fascinating is that he's just giving an example why from one you can describe another, although not 100%. For example, a person who has a very bright face and the moon, there's a similarity. But the similarity is not that they're both spherical. The similarity is they're both shining. So there's some kind of, on the, you know, just like the banyan tree, it's opposite in the material world. It's reflected in an opposite way. So even though the highest thing there is the lowest thing here, there's some connection, or the gopis love and love here in the world. Love here in the world is called Kamarupa. It's the form of lust. But it's not the consciousness of lust. I mean, the spiritual world is a form of lust as we know it here, but it's not the consciousness of lust. So there's some kind of, that's the point he's making. That, so now we'll read the explanation. Babaji, there are different categories of material objects, and the pandits of Nyaya consider them eternal. However, there is no such categorical difference between the chit, transcendental, and jada, material. I've already said that it is chit, that chit is the only reality, and jada is simply its perverted transformation, vikara. The vikara is different from the original source, but it is still similar to the pure original object in many respects. So, the material, there's one energy, and it's saying it's being transformed. So, it's different from its original source, but it's similar to the original source, too. Now, the example he gives is brilliant. For example, ice is a transformation of water, and it becomes different from water through this transformation, but the two remain similar in many of their qualities, such as coldness. Hot and cold water, both do not have the quality of coldness, but their quality of fluidity is the same. Therefore, the transformed object certainly retains similarity to the original object. According to this principle, the transcendental chit world can be understood to some extent with the help of material examples. Again, by adopting the logic of Arundhati Darshan, one can use material examples to understand something about the spiritual nature. I have to look up this logic thing, but what this Arundhati is. Material objects can be either different or non-different. So difference, non-difference are not visible in them at one and the same time. But this is not the case with Paramatattva. It says somehow material objects can either be different or non-different. We have to accept that Krishna is simultaneously different and non-different from his jiva tattva and from the jivas in it. This beta tattva, simultaneous difference and oneness, is said to be a chinta, inconceivable, because it is beyond the limit of human intellect. Vrajanath, next question. What is the difference between Ishvara and the jiva? First, you should understand, Babaji says, the non-difference between Ishvara and Jiva, and after that I will explain the eternal difference. Ishvara is the embodiment of knowledge, the knower, and the enjoyer. He is self-manifest, Swaprakash, and the source of other manifestations, Paraprakash. He has his own desires, and he is the knower of all, Kshetriya. The Jiva, too, is the form of knowledge, the knower, and the enjoyer. He, too, is self-manifest, and the source of all manifestations, and he too has desires, and is the knower of his own field, Kshetriya. From this perspective, there is no difference between them. So on a certain level, it's saying that the jiva has a very, very similar, I don't know what the word is, let's see. The jiva has a very, very similar functions, existence. On one level, it's a person. And the Supreme Law is a person. And these are the functions of a person. They have knowledge. They know things. They enjoy things. They're self-manifest. The source of other things. They have their own desires. And they're the knower of a particular field. So the jiva too has these same functions. This is the difference. However, Ishvara is omnipotent, and by dint of this omnipotence, he is the basis of all these qualities which are present in him in full. These qualities are also present in the atomic jiva, but only to a minute degree. Thus, the nature and form of Ishvara and the jiva are eternally different from each other because one is complete and the other is minute, and at the same time there's a lack of distinction between Ishvara and jiva because of the similarity between their qualities. Ishvara is the Lord of Sarup Shakti, Jiva Shakti, and Maya Shakti because of the completeness of the internal potency. Shakti is his maidservant, and he is the Lord of Shakti, which is activated by his desire. This is the Sarup of Ishvara. Though the qualities of Ishvara are present in the jiva to a minute degree, the jiva is nonetheless under the control of Shakti. The word Maya has been used in Dishamula to indicate Swarup Shakti as well as material Maya. The word Maya refers to the Shakti that gives knowledge of Krishna in all three worlds, namely the transcendental inert and the human world. Miyate anaya iti maya. Maya is that by which things can be measured. Maya. Krishna is the control of Maya, and jiva is under the control of Maya. Therefore, it is said in the Shweta Shvetara Upanishads, Asmin Mayi Shrijate Vishvametat Tasmin Chanyo Mayaya Daniruddha Mayam Tu Prakritim Vidyam Mayinam Tu Maheshvaram Tasya Vaya Bhutaish Tu Yaptam Sarvam Idam Jagat. Parameshva is the Lord of Maya. He has created the entire world where the jivas are bound in the illusion of material identification. It should be understood that Maya is his prakriti, and he is Maheshvara, the controller of Maya. This entire world is pervaded by his limbs. In this shloka, the word Mayinam is used to indicate Krishna, the controller of Maya, and prakriti is used to indicate the complete Shakti. His great qualities and nature are the special characteristics of Ishvara. They are not present in the jiva, and he cannot attain them even after liberation. It is said in Brahma Sutra 4.4.17, Jagat Vyapara Varajam. The creation, maintenance, and control of the entire transcendental inert world is the work of Brahma only and no one else. Liberated jivas can perform all great activities except this. The Shruti states, Yatova Imani Bhutani Jayanti. Taittiriya Upanishads 3.1. He is that by which all the jivas are created and maintained, and into which they enter and become unmanifest at the time of annihilation. These statements have only been made in relationship to Brahma, and they cannot be applied to the jiva by any amount of manipulation because there is no reference to liberated jivas here. The shastras state that there is only Bhagavan and not the liberated jiva who performs activities of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. One may suppose that the jiva can also perform these activities, but this does not rise to the philosophy of so many Ishvaras, Pavishvara dosha, which is defective. Therefore, the correct siddhanta is that jiva is not qualified for the above-mentioned activities, even when liberated. This establishes the eternal difference between jiva and Ishvara, and all learned people support this. This difference is not imaginary, but eternal. It does not disappear in any state of the jiva. Consequently, the statement that the jiva is an eternal servant of Krishna should be accepted as a fundamental statement, maya vakya. So, the difference is explained. Ishra is eternally the controller, and jiva never has this quality, never can become this quality. The next question we'll answer next class. If one can only prove the eternal difference between Ishra and jiva, how can one accept the oneness? Another point is that if there is oneness, we have to accept the state of merging with Ishra and nirvana. Okay, we'll answer that next. Would anybody like to say hello today? I want to see if anybody's still listening to the classes after missing them for so long. Anybody
Hare
there?
Krishna Maharaj. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah. Thank you for your steadiness.
Oh, well, thank you for yours.
Oh, I wasn't so steady, but anyway. But anybody else like to say hello today?
Jamaraj, it's Rati Krishna.
Yeah, I know you're there, Rati. Good. Okay, anyway, we'll get the numbers. Some others may be there too, but I'm practical, and I know that the way to keep these classes going is keep it steady. And now I'm kind of getting excited. Sometimes I'm in one place when you're traveling around, the mode and the food. And who's that?
This is your servant, Chamarupa Das.
Hey, great, thank you. Wonderful. Nice to see you in Boston.
Great.
Wonderful. Yeah, it was a wonderful to see you there, Mark. Thank you. Okay, I'm in Govardhan. I remember you were here with Niranjan Swami was here. I'm going to go around now. It's in the morning, and I'll have to now head around the hill. Okay, thank you all. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.